Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. If you are just tuning in, I would welcome you. And if you are new to Faith Radio, go to myfaithradio.com and you can check out the new welcome packet that we send out to all of our new listeners who want to hear and learn more about us. It's just such a nice packet and you can get it. There's so many great promotions here at Faith Radio. We're giving away a couple of Spurgeon study Bibles, two a week for the whole month. And they dangled one of these into the studio and let me look at it. And it's beautiful and it's rich leather. And Glenn just picked it up and he's drooling. Get the drool off it, Glenn. There we go. Glenn Pickering is still in studio.
I'm hoping to win the Bible. That's what I want.
He was in studio for my first hour and he's agreed to stay on a little bit longer because we had so many things coming in. So we're going to take that and then hopefully be joined by Vince Miller here in a little bit. Glenn, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you.
One more time.
I love it.
Kind of a BOGO. Buy one, get one free.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump back into a couple of questions our listeners came in with.
Okay.
Having grown up with a lot of frustration and disappointment in my life, I feel that I still have occasions where small frustrations and disappointments trigger a disproportionate response. Could this be a result of trauma, and how can I fix it?
The answer is absolutely yes. I can guarantee that it's true. And so thank you for that little segue, because I'm going to talk to you about a thing I call fables. Is that all right?
Please do. I think the topic is spectacular.
Cool. So I think what happens when we're little is it's just like what we think of as a fable. So a fable means somebody tells you a story, and then you're supposed to kind of figure out what the moral of that story is. So we hear the story about the grapes and, you know, the wolf walks away, thinking they're probably sour, and then we're supposed to draw little conclusions about that. Well, it's the same thing, just like with Aesop's fables. You hear a story, you draw a conclusion. Kids are always doing that. They see what happens around them, and they see that pretty clearly because they're keen little observers. And then they're drawing conclusions about that. Now, the hard part about that is not that they see things unclearly because they're very keen-eyed little observers. The problem is the interpretations or the little assumptions they come up with based on that are, A, always really black and white, because kids are little black and white thinkers, right? So let's say, for example, a bunch of disappointing things happened to me when I was little. Maybe I had an alcoholic dad, and even when he said we're going to go fishing, we never did, and all the little presents he said he was going to buy for me never did show up, or who knows what. And so I don't think to myself, because I'm a black and white thinker, oh, it's too bad that my dad doesn't always follow through sometimes. I think people lie, or nobody does what they say they're going to do, or I'm never going to get what I want. I mean, I'm going to come up with a childhood version to interpret what it is that's happening to me. And in that belief, I never get what I want, gets literally stuck in my head. I call that our personal fable. Each of us have one or two beliefs that we kind of came to when we're little, that when something happens now in the present day that really, really triggers us hard, some little thing happens, but it triggers a great big response, I can promise you, what happened is it triggered our fable. It triggered that old, old belief I have. So if I have that old belief, like our listener maybe has, something to the effect about I never get what I want, and then something happens where there's something I really want and I don't get it, that little kid part of me that really, really believes I will never, ever, ever get what I want gets triggered, and I just, for that little moment, I'm going to think, see, I never get what I want. And I might even be overwhelmed with the intensity of that feeling about how I never get what I want.
Mm.
Because I have that old, old thought. And it is a sort of trauma, and here's why. There are lots of people who work in the field of trauma recovery who say that what happens when there's trauma, why it's so bad for us as we get older, is not so much the trauma, but the things we say to ourselves about it. For example, let's say I'm a kid and I get sexually abused when I'm young. Okay. My parents find out, they step in, they protect me, they tell me it's not my fault, they take care of the person who did that to me, make sure that they get punished appropriately, and I hear all the right messages about that. Okay, it's still going to be icky that I got abused, of course. but I'm not going to be damaged in the same long-term way as if I'm a little kid, I get abused, I either don't tell anybody, and so I just walk around feeling like I'm bad, I'm dirty, I'm icky, sex is icky, and I have all those beliefs in my head. Now, when I grow up, my sex parts of my life are going to be messed up, and I'm going to say, well, it's because I got abused, which is sort of true. But what's really happening is my sex life is getting messed up because of all the things I say to myself about that. All the beliefs I have about sex or about myself is what's actually messing me up. So we need to understand when our fable gets triggered, what's happening is there's this old belief we have that's getting triggered by something that's happening in the present. And so we're having a reaction that's way out of proportion to anything that's actually happening in the present, because that really, really old, very old black and white childish belief of ours is getting triggered really hard.
All right. I can take a little break. We've got Dr. Glenn Pickering in my studio. If you have a question, keep them coming. 877-933-2484. As we talk about relationships, as love is in the air with Valentine's Day tomorrow, 877-933-2484, a call or a text. Be right back.
As our 70th anniversary approaches, we're celebrating. Join us for a night of comedy, music, and ministry. If you love Triple Espresso, you're going to really love this. Join Bill Arnold and the writers of Triple Espresso as we celebrate 70 years of radio ministry. Michael Pierce Donnelly, Bob Stromberg, and Bill Arnold will keep you laughing with a great evening of laughter and music. One night only, 7 p.m. March 16th at the Knight Performance Hall, the University of Northwestern in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tickets are on sale now at myfaithradio.com. For 70 years, Faith Radio has been connecting faith to life. God is using Faith Radio in exciting ways, and you can easily stay up to date through our ministry updates page at myfaithradio.com. To learn more about the ministry and what's currently happening here and where Faith Radio is growing, view our ministry updates page at myfaithradio.com. That's ministry updates found under the About tab at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. I've got Glenn Pickering still in my studio, which makes me very happy. Glenn is got quite a resume. He is a engineer. He's a pastor. He's a PhD in psychology. And we're discussing relationships. And the premise that I love is, and which is a little bit hard to get your arms around, is that all relationships are 50-50. Now, instantly, I know the hair on the back of your neck has gone up because you know that it's not the case in relationship, right?
I am the one exception.
So let's continue the discussion, Glenn, about the idea of fables. We all live with something in our head. You know, we were told we were awkward when we were 9, and we still feel awkward today because
right.
of that.
Right, because that thought keeps going through our head. And we
keep telling ourselves
right,
that.
Right, so we think, oh, it's because that happened to me. And it's like, no, it's because of what you keep telling yourself about what happened to you. And you know, you heard me talk on the earlier part of the show about how I really work hard with people at becoming what I call second responders. Because so often, if we're having that really intense first response, it's really just our fable. It's the thing we've told ourselves since we're little, since we're a kid, in a real childish way, and that part of us is getting triggered. And it's important to understand, when that part of us gets triggered and we have a huge reaction to some small thing that's happening, we need to understand, okay, this isn't actually real. How it feels real. It feels way, way big. But the fact that it feels that big means it's not real because some small thing just happened and you're having this really, really big reaction to it. And so anytime now that I have that feeling in me, I know I need to stop, slow down, and think, okay, what do I actually want to say here? What do I actually want to do here? And you will literally see me kind of close my eyes, be at prayer for a few seconds, and then speak because I just really get... You know, I come from this really shy, quiet family, so I mostly would never speak up about things unless I felt really, really intensely, and then I would speak up. And I've come to understand I got the whole thing backwards. I should speak up all the time except that time. Because that's the time when all the things that are running through my head, all my first responses, all the things I could literally blurt out without thinking are all untrue. Mm-hmm. Or at least they're a very exaggerated version of what's actually true.
Mm-hmm.
See, this just shows I never get what I want. Well, that's untrue. Something disappointing did just happen. That's true. I never get what I want is not true.
Right.
And so, but if I'm in the moment of telling myself that because I'm kind of stuck in my fable, I actually think it is true, which is why I need to stop long enough, slow down, and actually think. Because while that thought is going through my head, I'm not actually thinking. I'm literally experiencing an intrusive thought.
Mm-hmm. It's like a kid who says to their parents, "You always say no."
Right.
And you go, "No, no, no." Parents say yes to their kids all the time.
Right. Right. But because kids are black and white thinkers, remember, yeah. when they interpret something, they're going to interpret it in that black and white way. Let's say my dad once is pretty nice to me, but once in a while he's had too much to drink, he gets loud, and then he gets really mean. I don't think to myself if I'm a little kid, "Oh, gosh, mostly men are okay, and mostly my dad is too, but sometimes he gets a little loud." I think men are mean
mm-hmm.
because I'm a little kid, and I'm a black and white thinker.
Yeah.
So I just want you to have this picture in your head. So when my daughter Rachel was 4 years old, she was outside playing with her little friend Elizabeth. They got into a bit of a tiff about something. Now, did my daughter come in and say to me, "Dad, you know, Elizabeth is still a good friend of mine. I'm sure we'll play again later. Right now, I'm going to take a little bit of a break and until I calm down, and then we'll be playing games again in the backyard later on." Did she say any of those things to
no.
me? No. I hate Elizabeth. She's not my friend. I'm never going to play with her
right.
again, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Yeah, that's the black and white.
Which is a very black and white version of what was actually happening, which is what's happening is that hurt my feelings and I'm mad right now. That's mm-hmm. actually true. All the rest of it is like a way, way, way black and white version of what was actually mm-hmm. true. Now, when we're a little kid, because we're such black and white thinkers, we literally can't tell the difference. When we say those things when we're 3 or 4, we think those things are true. Even as an adult, we can say, "Well, honey, that's not actually true."
Mm-hmm.
But see, when our fable gets triggered, we're right back in that 3 or 4-year-old spot, and we think those crazy things we're seeing in our head are actually true.
Mm. So if we've got that fable, Glenn, that yep. sticks around with us for a long time.
Yep.
A, how do we get rid of it? And B, let's apply some scripture to that situation.
Great, love it.
In Proverbs 23, it says, "For a man, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." So
right.
whatever I'm thinking in my heart is what I must be telling myself.
Right.
So am I telling myself truth or
exactly.
am I telling myself lies or
right.
what am I telling myself?
So when if you say, "Well, how do I get rid of my fable?" This is going to sound negative. I don't mean it negatively. I honestly don't think we do. I think those neural pathways are grooved really deep in our brain, and I don't think it ever changes. So part of what I was saying in the earlier part of the show is that I think the old first reactions that I have will always be pretty much the same. But what I do is I get better and better at recognizing that, remembering that I have the option of using my freedom in Christ. I can slow down for 3 or 4 seconds and let Jesus come alongside me so that together we figure out what to say, and then I can talk. So it's not that my first reaction is any better. That's why I teach people so hard to become what I call second responders. I want to have just long enough for my second response to show up,
mm-hmm.
my real response. And sometimes people say, "Well, Glenn, so you don't want me to be my real self?" And I think, no, I do want you to be your real self. And those things that you could blurt out when you're not talking are not your real self.
Mm-hmm.
They're your 3 or 4-year-old self.
Yeah. So we do we have control over our thoughts?
No, I don't have control over that thought. I have control over what comes next.
Okay.
So,
but the first thought that comes in is going to be your knee-jerk response.
Exactly.
And you have no control over that,
right.
but you have
right.
the second
exactly.
responder, which
right.
is, right. I can pause, pray, and proceed.
Exactly. Thank
yeah.
you. I love that. So, and what happens then is, I love that quote about as a man thinketh, and I think, right. See, if I go with my first response, I'm not actually thinking. That's the problem. I'm reacting. I'm not actually thinking. I want to give myself just long enough to make sure my brain actually kicks in and I actually am thinking. Because then whatever I want to say will actually be true and will come from my heart and will be real and will be helpful. But right at that split second when I'm overwhelmed with that little childhood feeling, and kids have real big feelings, whatever I'm going to say while I'm in the midst of that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
It will be at best an exaggerated version of what's true, and it might not be true at all.
So, Glenn, how do we take thoughts captive,
thank
like
you.
It tells us to do.
I swear to you, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Okay.
So let's say I'm overwhelmed by that thought. I never get what I want. I'm going to slow down and pray and say, "God, I know that thought's not actually true. Help me see what's true. Help me see what's real." Okay. What's real is that was very disappointing. That was disappointing enough that it kind of stings. Okay. That's what actually happened. And that's how I take every thought captive. I slow down just long enough for me and God to think, okay, what's actually real? What's actually true? What actually happened? What do I actually want to say about that?
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I've got several questions, Glenn. Don't get comfortable. Take a sip of coffee if you must, but you've got questions to answer coming up. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. It's 18 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. He's been nice enough to stay and be part of hour two because we just got overwhelmed with questions and we're trying to sort through all of them. And thank you, Glenn, for being here. We've got some listeners who have just joined the program who were not around for hour one. So when you made a comment about relationships being 50-50, it is a source of confusion for some. I think it's worth resetting that so everyone is sort of on the same page.
Great. I love that.
I think the people that heard it in the 3 o'clock hour aren't going to mind hearing it again either, because that would include me.
Cool. All right. So let me talk about fables, which we're just finishing on, and then go with the 50-50 because they're totally interrelated. Is that okay?
Yep.
So let's say we had a question. A listener said, you know, my wife was sex abused when she was little and still has some really, really big reactions now in the present. And I think, right. And this sort of bleeds into the 50-50 thing. If I'm married to a person who gets triggered by certain things, and we all do, here's what I finally learned. And you need to understand, I did it wrong so many times. The other person gets triggered, and then we get defensive about ourselves or explain ourselves or trying to apologize, or we start talking about ourselves. But see, if the person's getting triggered, they're like an anxious little kid. Like, how can I say? So back when my daughter was like 3 or 4, she woke up screaming in the middle of the night, and so, of course, I got up very quickly, run downstairs to see what's wrong. Well, it turns out there's a monster in her closet. And now I can see, of course, that it's her little nightlight making a shadow on her teddy bear, and I get that.
So you didn't run out of the house screaming?
No, I was tempted, but I did stay.
All right, good for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very courageous, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so I see that while I'm coming into the room and she's crying and screaming. Okay, do I talk logically to her while she's crying and screaming? No, I have to join her where she is, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put my arm around her, kiss her on the head, and tell her it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll figure out the teddy bear and what to do. See, I'm not going to walk her in and say, well, it's not my fault the teddy bear is up there. I didn't make that shadow. What are you blaming me for? Which, if we're not careful, when our partner gets triggered, we sort of say things like that because we think we need to defend ourselves. But if we really, really get, no, my honey is just getting triggered by something from his or her past. It doesn't have anything to do with me. Great. That means I don't have to defend myself, explain myself, or do anything about myself. I can just comfort them. So then if my honey gets triggered by something that's sexual or who knows what, instead of getting all defensive, I can just very gently sit by and say, honey, I'm sorry that that happens for you. Very, very gently, the same as you would comfort a little kid, because honestly, remember, when we're in our fable, we kind of are that little kid. Like, we're literally overcome by those thoughts and feelings we had when we're little. And so we need to comfort each other just like you'd comfort a little kid. Same thing if I get triggered, I need going to do the same thing. I need her to sit by me, hold my hand, tell me it's going to be okay. And so she can kind of see that I come back into the room like as an adult. And then we'll have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, we just need to comfort the other one. So if you're have a person in your life who gets triggered sometimes and you think, I don't know what to do, we end up having really bad conversations, I want you to just think this. Next time they get triggered, which of course they will, I want you to just think, if I dropped all of my stuff and was just comforting to this one who is scared, what would I do? Would I sit by them? Would I hold their hand? Would I talk very gently to them? What? Then I will actually be helpful.
Yeah, great.
But first I have to remember, it's not my stuff.
All right, Glenn, if we can reset the 50-50 discussion, there was a listener that was a little bit confused. He just tuned in, and thought that you were talking about contribution to relationship, not fault.
Nope.
So he wanted to clarify that when contributing to relationship, it should be 100%.
Well, that's actually really bad math, so we'll come back to that in a minute. You know, this is where you can tell I used to be an engineer.
Well, do explain.
I will explain. Thank you very much. And thank you for putting up with my goofiness.
That's okay.
So, all right. So, what I was really talking about was all of us get into patterns in relationships, and some of them are effective and some of them are not effective. And when we get into one of our patterns that's not effective, we can get in an argument that we always have, or a certain kind of interaction pattern that always goes badly. It's so easy to play the game I call tag and just think, okay, whose fault is it? And, of course, I want it to not be my fault because in the game of tag, the one goal is to not be it. So I want it to be not me. So I'm likely to blame the other person or see what they did wrong, et cetera, et cetera. But if I actually want to break out of that pattern and not just keep repeating it, I need to ask a different question. What are the patterns that we get into, and the emphasis is on the word we, what's my half of that pattern? Because each of us has our half of that pattern. Otherwise, the pattern wouldn't keep coming up. And what first steps can I take to start changing my half of that pattern? Now, Then we break out of the game where I was at just asking the stupid question, whose fault is it? And we start asking a Christ-like question, what are the patterns? What's my half of that? How can I start changing my half? And I promise you that when Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye, you don't see the log in your own eye, this is what he's trying to talk to us about. First, we have to start with ourselves, not in a blaming way like, oh, so it has to be all my fault. No, I have to just be clear. What's the pattern? What's my half of that pattern?
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's another remark, I believe. My wife was sexually molested from 5 to 7, reported to her mom, who did nothing. Wife's father was an abusive alcoholic who was out of the family by the time she was 16. Additionally, my wife was married and divorced before we got married. She overreacts frequently, which leads to much conflict.
Right. So here's what I want to say to you. There doesn't have to be any conflict. And she's not overreacting. She's just reacting, by which I mean she's not thinking. She's just reacting. Same with what I talked about, that first response. I can promise you that's all that icky stuff that happened to your wife, that she grew up thinking, I'm unprotected. Nobody will take care of me. Nobody will protect me. So please understand, every time she gets triggered, she literally needs to feel you protect her. So you need to drop all your defensiveness, anything where you try to make it about yourself, because you just need to think, it's not about me. And to ask your wife, honey, how could I help you feel protected right now? Not in general, literally right now. Can I hold you? Can I pray over you? Can I sit by you? Can I tell you why I think you're really great? What would help you feel protected right now? And you will break out of that icky pattern, and you're going to start having this incredibly loving pattern. And
again, it sounds simple, and it also sounds like the person that's going to do this is going to, it's going to take some courage on their part.
It will take courage, and it will take them also being what I call that second responder, because our first response, when the other person reacts intensely, we want to defend ourselves or protect ourselves or tell ourselves, explain or rationalize or not be it, blah, 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 which means mm-hmm. I have to drop all of my stuff because I have to remember, this is really not about me. My wife learned these things way before we met, literally decades probably before we met. So I don't have to defend myself or explain it because it's not about me. And mm-hmm. the instant I get it's not about me, so I don't have to say anything about myself, zero, I can then just focus on her and say, honey, what can I do right now to help you feel like I'm protecting you?
Yeah. Do you have a question? Do you have a concern? Do you have a relationship issue that you've been stuck in and you know that's Valentine's Day tomorrow? You got to be at your best. Maybe you can start to get some free counsel. Please give us a call with your question, 877-933-2484. You can text me a question as well, 877-933-2484. Or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. Of course, you can remain anonymous. But of course, we'd love to get your questions. We'll take a little break and be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. If you're just climbing into the car or turning on the radio, we're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering, and he is a counselor in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. GlennPickering.com is his web address if you want to go check it out, and his books and his counseling practice is there at GlennPickering.com. Glenn, callers are still coming in with all kinds of interesting questions.
Love
what
it.
About when, this is a listener that said, while watching movies and especially chick flicks, I'm struck by the concept of friends feeding thoughts into your relationship. How does one surround themselves with friends who will give you tough love, not just, oh, he, she is at the fault, of course. You know how friends always try to make it about the other person.
It's, right. Yes, I was just teasing Bill on our little break time, talking about, how, which he knows this, that I'm going to call my next book, Why Your Friends Are Always Wrong, because your friends are just going to play tag too, right? So I say, oh, Gwen really bugs me, and they're going to jump on, you're right, she's terrible, she's awful, it's not your fault, which is so it's untrue, and it's unhelpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I need people in my life. I don't need them tough love. I just need them to ask gentle questions, and we need to be clear. Tough love is actually not helpful. And in fact, it puts a wrong picture in our mind. If I say, hey, it's really going badly with me and Gwen, I need my friend to say, Paul, oh, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. What are you kind of learning? What's your half of that? How can I support you in making the changes you can see you need to make? Those are loving questions.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's confronting me. Nobody's being tough with me. They're just very gently asking loving questions. And you'll notice all their questions are not about Gwen. They're always going to be about me. What's your half? How do you want to start? How can I support you? How can I pray for you? What would be good? Like, how can I help you address whatever? Of course, I know you will want to address your half of that relationship, so how can I help you do that? Now, the question is, how do I surround myself with those people? And I need to be really clear that I'm open to that, because oftentimes people get all defensive. Well, Glenn, what's your part of that? Oh, so you're saying it's all my fault. Well, trust me, I'm not going to get those kind of questions from people after that response. So if I say I want to be surrounded by those people, I have to make sure that when they ask me those loving questions, that I'm open to those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even let them know that that's what I want. So even if the other person starts saying, yeah, Gwen, she's got her problems, I can just gently say, well, actually, I really want to focus on my half. So, like, what do you see in me? Like, when I deal with conflict, what do you see? What could I do differently? When I tell you that story, what do you see where I kind of went off base? How could I do that differently? And I just need to coach my friends about what I want, because they will do that with me. But they have to be clear that that's what I want, because their knee-jerk response, just like all of our knee-jerk responses, will be to play tag and just blame the other person, thinking somehow that this is being supportive, when, of course, it's incredibly unhelpful.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have too many of those bad thoughts already in my head.
So would it be good to ask, well, what are you feeling and how are you being treated? Are those good questions or are those dumb questions?
No, they're great questions. They're questions that say, Glenn, go ahead and tell me that story a little deeper so I really understand. Great. But once they feel like, okay, I kind of get what happened, then I just need to say, okay, cool. Well, what do you want to do? How do you want to deal with that? Where would you start? How can I support you?
Mm-hmm. When does tough love come in?
That's what I'm saying. I don't believe in tough love. I think I'm just going to ask gentle questions.
What? Oh, okay. Well, what? All right.
I mean, what would tough love even mean?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I go, Glenn, how are you feeling? And you go, well, you know, I come home at night and Gwen makes me a 7-course dinner, but the other night she kind of put too much pepper in the meatloaf. I'm going, boy, Glenn, I got problems. You got problems.
Can I trade places with you?
You know, it's like you're just not being wise.
Right.
So when do I show up with tough love and go, get a grip, pal?
You know, honestly, I can tell you the exact number of times that actually helps.
I have a feeling it's the big zero.
Right.
All right. You don't want to come to me for counsel, Glenn, just so you know.
That's right. Don't go there. Don't even think about it.
Yeah. If you have a question for Glenn Pickering, let's get your question asked, 877-933-2484. You can call or text or email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. But send me a text, 877-933-2484. Listener said, one trick I've tried, this is back to managing emotions. One trick I've tried is whenever I'm having a strong emotion, I ask God, what do you think about this and what should I think about this? Could be helpful.
It's super helpful, I think, because remember, we're having those strong emotions because we're saying things to ourselves that are not true. Our thoughts are literally off track.
Mm-hmm.
So to ask that question, God, what do you think? And what should I be thinking about this is a great way to think, yeah, I need to get myself back on track. And I'm going to get myself back on track not by changing my behavior or my emotions, but by changing my thinking, because it's my thoughts that are triggering all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you have a leaky pipe in your basement. You pretty much call a plumber that week, but you have issues in the relationship and maybe you wait 10 years before you get help. Why? What's up with that?
You know, honestly, it hurts my heart to see how long people sometimes do wait before they actually reach out and get help. And I think we're all actually afraid of change, whether we want to admit it or not. I'm often struck by the fact that 3 days into the wilderness stories, you know, the Israelite people, they had to work 18 hours a day, work in the hot sun, make their own bricks. It was awful, terrible. They got beaten. They only got one meal a day. 3 days into the wilderness, where they're clearly on the right path. The Red Sea has parted. God has gone before them in a pillar of fire. 3 days in, they say, you know, maybe we should go back. Because, you know,
we
did get one meal every day, right?
Yeah, right.
And so God has always wanted to ask me to take one step outside my comfort zone, because our God is a God of transformation, and the one thing that ever happens in my comfort zone is transformation. That's why it's so comfortable. So we have to be willing, if we're going to be on a godly path, to be slightly uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but I want to emphasize that you do have to be willing to be uncomfortable, but I really also want to emphasize this slightly. God never asked me to take 7 steps ahead of where I am, just one. God has always asked me to just take one step past where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
So even when I talk to people about not playing tag, just say, what's the pattern? What's my half? And what's the first thing I could do to start changing my half?
Mm-hmm.
it's important to understand. God just wants us to get started, and that's all we really need to do.
Yeah. All right, what about if there's a couple that just have their long-standing conflict patterns are mm-hmm. almost legendary.
Right.
And how do they get out of those patterns? How do they break a mold that's just been forever?
Right. The first question is, do they actually want to?
That's a good point.
Because if they don't want to, there is no way out.
Okay. That's a great answer.
If they come to me and say, Glenn, we hate this pattern. Can you help us? I'm like, yeah, I can help you break that in like 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I can help you start breaking that in 2 days.
Right.
That's because, you know.
But you both have to want to.
Yeah. But as soon as you want to, I can easily teach you a different pattern.
Yeah.
A lot of times people get pretty hooked on that adrenaline and they kind of like it, whether they want to admit it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually kind of scary to them. I do that seminar for couples called Living the Truth, and it's powerful and it's life-changing. And I've really come to understand this. If people say, well, Glenn, I can't come, they're going to tell me it's about time or it's about money. But here's what I've learned. It's never about time or it's never about money. They're not coming for one of two reasons. They either think it's not really going to help them or they think it will.
Yeah, that's scary stuff.
Right.
Yeah. What about, Glenn, when two people are talking, there's conflict, and one person wants to keep talking until it's settled,
mm-hmm.
and the other person just wants to stop, make it go away.
Well, here's what you need to understand if you're the one who wants to keep talking. Just remember this. When adrenaline is going through our brain, we're not thinking. So there's literally no point in continuing to talk. It will literally just get worse. On the other hand, I don't want you to think I'm saying so don't have that conversation. I'm saying literally I want you to get up, walk, pray, do whatever you have to do for several minutes until the adrenaline wears off, and then I want you to come back and have that conversation. So you need to give yourself both a chance to come back to your right mind so you can come back to that conversation. And what I said in the earlier hour is, and when we come back to that conversation, we can't come back just repeating the point we are trying to make because that's already the problem. We each just keep saying our thing over and over again, and the other one feels not understood. We have to take our time out as a way to think, okay, I'm ready to come back and summarize what the other person was saying. And I literally can't come back until the adrenaline wears off, I'm thinking clearly, and I can adequately summarize what the other person was saying. And as soon as we can both do that, then we need to come back to that conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's another question. My mom, 76, suffered extreme physical and emotional child abuse. I have taken her to Christian counseling throughout the years. What she learned doesn't seem to stick. How can I best encourage her to respond as she was taught instead of just react? She gets upset. That I tried to fix her. Do I continue to remind her how to process feelings or let her figure it out on her own and avoid the argument?
There's no argument. And here's what I mean. I often talk to people with adult kids about parenting adult people, and I tell them the first thing they need to be really careful about is they need to make sure that they're not giving answers to questions nobody's asking. Now, and the problem with your 76-year-old mom is you keep answering questions that she's not asking. And so when she says, you're just trying to fix me, you need to understand that's actually true. And it's not your place.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you can see that what she's doing is not helpful to her, that she stays stuck, that habit maybe even drives some of her friends away, and you can literally see, and so can she, that it's having a bad impact on her life, I still don't get to decide for that person that they have to do it differently.
Right.
One of my first books I wrote something about that the only thing harder for me than letting go of control was admitting I never had any. So sometimes people say, well, Glenn, you got to learn to let go of control. And I think, no, you need to acknowledge you don't have any.
Yeah, great point.
We look at our 76-year-old mom and think, I know your life would be better if, but it's really important to understand. She gets to decide that if.
Right, right. Here's another question, Glenn. My husband wants a divorce and doesn't want to work on the marriage or try to reconcile. He seems to think it is all my fault. I have owned all of my part of it, but he doesn't see he has done anything wrong. So mm-hmm. how can I talk to him? I feel I've been very vulnerable in admitting my flaws, but his response is, I'm glad you're finally seeing your flaws. This is why I want a divorce. He's mm-hmm. not willing to see his part in the problem. What else can I do? What can I do?
Sadly, not a lot, except sometimes this is helpful. Sometimes the person that does that blaming just really likes kind of the adrenaline rush that comes out of that. And I'm very tempted in that situation to say, okay, if that's what you want, go ahead. That is a way of shifting that conversation in a pretty powerful way. Now, if that person really is just looking for a reason to get out the door, then they might go out the door. But please understand, they were going to do that anyway, so it's not like you've lost anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it might actually shock them to think, oh, my goodness, it's not what I really want. Because, see, people will play tag. They don't want to end the relationship. They just want to, you know, know everything's your fault, because then it's not their fault.
Right.
And for them, if we have a conversation and I walk away feeling like a bad person, like everything's my fault, it's painful for me to say, but for them, that was a successful conversation. So they might actually be wanting to leave, and they might just really like being able to tell you that it's all your fault. And so instead of defending or fighting, I would encourage you to say, you know, well, if that's what you want to do, you go ahead. I'm not going to, because I don't believe in that. But mm-hmm. that's really what you're going to do.
I'm sure that's 100% counterintuitive to how she's
right.
feeling.
Exactly, right. But it's important, same thing to understand. I don't have control of another person. If they really have decided they're leaving,
what can you do?
I don't get to be in charge of that.
Yeah.
But what I can do is I can break all of my old patterns. And instead of begging or pleading or getting defensive, I can say, okay, cool. Well, if that's what you really want, I want you to be clear. It's not what I want, but if that's what you want, okay.
Wow. That's a hard thing to say.
It takes discipline, and it really does. Again, once again, I have to be willing to override all my knee-jerk, fearful, defensive reactions and just let God speak through me. But God always speaks very powerfully and very directly, and God is never coming from a fearful place. So God's going to put really bold words in mm-hmm. my lips.
I would imagine you're going to want to be quite prayed up when you get ready to make that kind of stance.
Right, exactly. You just have to be clear.
Are you calling their bluff? What are you doing?
Exactly, right. You're just saying, I'm not going to be part of this game anymore where you just walk around making me feel bad and then thinking that was a great conversation. I'm done doing that.
Because there's some power situation and power struggle here, and he's probably in what he thinks is in the driver's seat.
I know, exactly. So I'm going to say, great. So, okay. So do that if you want. Partly because I get really, truly, if they've already decided that in their heart, then they have already decided it. I'm not making them do it. They already decided it anyway. And if that's not really what they want, but they just like having me feel bad, that will break that pattern instantly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. We're enjoying this time with him. If you have a question and would like to get a relationship question answered, you can call or text 877-933-2484. I'll give that number again a little slower, 877-933-2484. Be back in 90 seconds. Welcome back to the show. 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in the studio with me. Go to glennpickering.com to learn more about Glenn. And G-L-E-N-N, two N's, P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G. He's got a fabulous offer about midway down the first page of his website that says if you want a 20-minute consultation with him, he'd be happy to do that. So please take advantage of that. He loves to chat. Glenn, here's a question. We have a child in the family who experienced extreme abuse, sexual, physical, mental, as a child before being in our family. How do we reset those thoughts so that they do not become fables later in life? How do you get into someone's head when you don't know what they are thinking?
That's a great question and a loving question, and I want to honor you for having that kid in your life and for asking that question.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to reframe that question, but I just want you to understand, I think it's a loving question, and I praise you for the question. You don't get to get in their head. What you do get to is you give them a set of examples that help them start thinking differently on their own. So, for example, if I have a kid who gets abused, and I ask them, hey, what would you like for supper? And they look really scared, and they say, I don't care. I'm just going to say, I'm going to put my hand on them very gently, and I'm going to say, it's okay. You get to just say what you want around here. Now, notice, I'm not being bold. I'm not being mean. I'm just really literally giving them a different way to think. And you don't have to be like that around here. Oh, so they start to think, there are exceptions to the icky rule that I have going in my head. Well, that's actually true. Because if I think, all people are mean to me, that's not helpful. If I think, okay, I've got to quit thinking that, so from now on, I'm just going to assume everybody in the world is going to be nice to me. Well, that's not true either. What's actually true is some people are really trustworthy and some are not, and God gives me the discernment to tell who's who. And so I can't take out of that kid's head the thought that some people are mean. I can help him see, though, that you can do discernment and you can kind of actually tell who is and who isn't. And I want them to help think of that slightly differently.
Okay. A couple more questions, Glenn. Great. My husband was molested. He's never dealt with it. And sometimes he's very cruel with the way he acts.
Yeah.
Whenever I tell him about it, he acts like I'm sensitive or trying to change him. How can I encourage him to deal with all of that? And what is the best way to help him?
That's a really great question. One of the things me and Gwen do, and when we first started understanding fables, we gave ourselves permission to do this. If one of us got triggered, we gave the other one permission to just say, "And I think that might be your fable." Now notice, not that is your fable, which would come across very judgmental. Just, "I think that is your fable." Now here's why that's incredibly helpful. When I'm in my fable, I'm not actually in the present. I'm back being that little kid that all those things happened to. And I'm responding and I'm thinking from that place. But if Gwen says, "Hun, I think maybe that's just your fable, so I have to stop and think just for a second about if that's true," stopping and thinking about it brings me back in the present, which pulls me out of my fable. So if I'm with somebody like that, I'm just going to say, "Hun, it seems like something happened that triggered you. Is that true?" And they have to just stop and think, "Well, yeah, when you said this or that. Okay, cool. What was especially hard about that?" And then we're going to have a conversation about that. So we're not going to ignore that it happened. But I'm not going to interact with them while they're in their fable, because I promise you, I just get sucked into the fable. Like, I just become a character in the play that's happening in their head, and I will get treated like I'm a character in that play. And let me tell you this, I'm not going to get treated well. So it's not my job to respond to what they're saying. That will just pull me more into their craziness. It's just my job to say, "Huh, it seems like maybe you got triggered by something," or whatever that is. But we have to agree ahead of time that we're going to do that with each other. So I don't want that to come out of the left field on them. I want them to know, here's what I'm going to do. And I want that person who says that, "Hun, I think maybe it seems like something happened that triggered you." I need to be clear. I really have to ask that as a loving question, because it would be so easy for that to come across as a tag playing judgment. "See, you just got triggered again. You always do that. See, once again, you..." Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, there's so many ways to do that wrong.
Yeah.
So it has to come from that gentle place where you're really, truly just trying to be helpful. "Hun, it seems like maybe you just got triggered."
Yeah. All right, Glenn, here's a question about the divorce question. How do you support a friend who is in that situation? The husband is leaving. I have a friend who is going through that, and we know the man and the woman.
We know the man and the woman.
I mean, obviously, this person knows both
the husband and wife.
Yes. Yeah. And the husband's leaving. So we want to be supportive to the friend, which is probably the woman.
Right.
So how do we support a friend in that situation?
We say, "What do you need?" Notice all too often we jump in and we assume or we do something or we start judging the other person. But see, we need to know, "Hey, hon, I want to be supportive of you. What do you need?" And they might tell me, "I just need to talk through this." Great. They might tell me, "I need you to help me sort of see what my half of that was." Okay. They might tell me they need somebody to make supper for the kids tomorrow because they're overwhelmed. Okay. It's not my job to guess that, because I will always guess wrong. Because what they need will be idiosyncratic to them. So I'm just going to ask, "Hon, I want to be supportive of you. What can I do to be supportive? What can I do to help? How can I help?" And every time I see them, I'm going to ask that question.
All right. Here's another question, Glenn. Is there a link between a depressed spouse and them wanting to get a divorce?
Yes. And here's how come. People who are depressed in part because they think some of those same kind of black and white thoughts that I was talking about. So, for example, sometimes when a person is grieving, like maybe somebody close to them died, and they think, "Glenn, I feel like I'm depressed." I think, "No, you're grieving." Now, here's the tricky thing. There's a 21-item test for grief, and there's a 21-item test for depression, and about 16 or 17 of those questions sound pretty much the same, because there's a lot of overlap between grief and depression. Grief is, somebody close to me died, and I feel really sad. Great. Depression is, somebody close to me died, and I think it's all my fault. I should have been there. There's something I should have done. I'm a bad friend. And I start in that black and white way judging myself for the fact that this thing happened. Now I'm going to tailspin into depression. Okay. Well, just imagine that a person who tends to think like that anyway, then with the marriage isn't going well, they're thinking, "Well, it's not going very well, but we can work on it. We got possibilities." They're going to think, "Oh, it's over. It's hopeless. Nothing's ever going to get better." And they're going to have some of those same black and white thoughts about their marriage that they have about everything else. That's part of why they're depressed in the first place, because they think sort of in those black and white terms, which are very depressing. So, yes, they're more likely, when we hit a bump in the road in the marriage, which, let's be honest, there are going to be bumps in their road. But if they're depressed, they're more likely to go to, it's hopeless, it's over, there's nothing I can do, which are very depressive thoughts. And they're more likely then to entertain the thought of getting divorced instead of getting help.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's a question. This person is probably the poster child for TAG. What do we do about a sibling who blames everyone around her, especially her mom? The sibling is never wrong. She knows which buttons to push to make others look like the bad person.
First of all, quit letting them push your buttons. Now, I'm going to tell you a silly story, but I promise it has a point. I had a mom say to me the other day, Glenn, I got a 3-year-old, and man, she knows how to push every button I have. And I said to her, your kid doesn't even know you have buttons. You know who your kid thinks about all the time?
What?
Themselves,
yeah.
You have buttons? You have a life? You have a personality? You have needs of your own? I have no clue that any of that's true.
True.
I'm not pushing your buttons. I'm just asking for what I want. And somehow that pushes your buttons. Okay. But trust me, that kid's not trying to push your buttons. They don't even know you have them. Okay. So it's important to understand if you think, okay, there's a person around who knows how to push all my buttons. I need you to think, no. Take control of your own buttons. Just because somebody else acts in a certain jerky, blaming, harsh-spirited way, I could get all defensive. And remember, you'll hear me talk about this a million times. That's kind of my first response. That's my knee-jerk. But I want to go with my second response, which is, oh, I get it. I don't have to get all defensive. This is how she talks to everybody. See, I only get defensive if I think it's about me or I take it personally or I think, how could you say that about me? And we all get all egocentric and we think things like that to ourselves. But a way truer thought would be, wow, you really do treat people badly. You do that pretty much everywhere you go. And I'm going to say a little prayer that God finds some way to break through to you, and I'm honest to God, it's going to move on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
got a quick couple minutes left, Glenn.
Yep.
So here's my last question. Okay. How do I not feel anxious about spending money on health issues?
Well, if it's spending money coming to see me, you shouldn't feel anxious. You should just feel really happy about yourself.
Right.
I think anxious just means you feel alone. So I just want to know who could be on your team about that, who could support you, who could care for you, who could be praying for you, who could be on your team about that, because when we're anxious, that just means I feel really alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that
that's
the answer
plan, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Make
and so
you
the,
feel alone.
Yeah, so the answer is not to quit feeling that way. The answer is to actually be connected with a few people who know what you're going through and are supporting for you, caring for you, being on your team. I promise you'll stop feeling anxious.
Yeah. How does it feel being in my shoes today, Glenn, having a 2-hour radio show? You've been nice enough to be my guest both hours. Thank
like
you for
it.
Doing
Thanks.
That.
Yeah.
How did your energy hold up? Pretty good?
I don't know. How did it look?
I thought it was great.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Glenn Pickering has been my guest. Go to glennpickering.com. That's GlennPickering. And you can learn more about Glenn. And he also offers you something pretty special. You can get a free 20-minute phone consultation with him. So take advantage of that if there's something you would like to discuss. He loves doing it. That wraps up our show. If you missed any of it, I have to say this has been very, very interesting, Wiz. We've talked about relationships on the eve of Valentine's Day tomorrow. Can't forget that's tomorrow. Make sure you don't mess up, right? Right, Glenn?
You don't want to be it.
You don't want to be it. Yeah. But I appreciate you listening. Thank you so much for being supporters of Faith Radio, and it makes so much difference because we're here to serve the Lord and then to give you and lead you in your spiritual growth. So have a great night, everyone, and I will see you tomorrow as you lay that head on the pillow. Just be reminded that God is writing his story in your life. So all is good. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.